The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs. Will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Style. To get things accomplished, she knows how. Things are gonna start changing now. GOP control is finally waning. As soon as she starts mansplaining, mansplaining. She knows what to say, mansplaining. So get out of her way. Our new speaker will speak what's true, 'cause she'll mansplain it to you. First speech has people shaken. She trolled the GOP by quoting Reagan. But at her historic swearing-in, why did they talk about what she was wearing? I guess folks still need a bit more training. Time for some more mansplaining. Mansplaining. Opponents will unravel mansplaining. Now that she has her gavel, the GOP will need a new stratagem. When she mansplains it to them, Fox News likes to put her down. But she's the toughest legislator in town. Corrals her caucus, puts together deals, doing it backwards and in high heels. She'll make sure the swamp's really draining when she starts mansplaining, mansplaining. Trump's lies, she'll cut down mansplaining. Makes them own the shutdown. Oh, it really gets their goats when she mansplains the votes. Mansplaining schools those spineless men. Mansplaining facts will matter again. Decency in government, she'll regain it. Nancy's gonna mansplain it.
The latest from Lauren Mayer. Lauren's comedy, Nansplaining. Yeah, I could have used that yesterday to kick off the show. It's the newest one from Lauren Mayer, who does these great comedy songs. Welcome to Wednesday. I'm Nicole Sandler. Did you watch the thing last night? I told you you didn't have to. You didn't have to, so I would. Before we get into the meat of anything, I'm actually going to play something for you that I first found. I got to be about 3 weeks ago or so when this video surfaced. It's from a guy named, I think, Neil Kassler. And Neil Kassler worked for years on The Apprentice. And he talks about some things he learned. And Neil Kassler is now a stand-up comedian. And I'm going to play this because, of course, I'm watching the dotard do his speech last night. My God, he's like a third grader reading a book report that he's never seen before, you know, that he copied from another source. I read the book, Gulliver's Travels, and here's what I thought. It was good. That's what he sounded like, except he constantly, you know, sniffed. And the sniffing got worse as we got towards the end of the speech. Now, somebody, prolific person with too much time on their hands took the video of Trump's address last night and edited it so all it had were the breaths and the sniffs. Now, I'm not going to play that for you because honestly, it's not very exciting television, but I'll find it and I'll try to remember to post it on the blog along with today's podcast at NicoleSandler.com so you can see it for yourself. Because at the 32nd mark in one of Trump's exhales, a piece of white something flies out of his nose. And the speculation is that it was a little piece of the chopped up Adderall that he snorts. How do we know that he snorts it? Well, we've heard those rumors forever. Howie Klein, who's on with me every Thursday, who has inside knowledge. He's got his conversations with some heavy hitters who, you know, remain nameless. And Howie, for, you know, years, a couple of years anyway, has talked about Trump's problem with snorting Adderall. And then comes this video from this this comedian, again, I think Neil Casal. I have it written down somewhere. Neil something or other. Anyway, let me see. I hate getting names wrong, especially when I'm about to play somebody. And I already pulled it down. All right. Well, here we go. This is Neil, I think, Casal. Oh, hold on. Do I have it here? Yeah. Anyway, I'll tell you afterwards. His name is Neil. His name is Neil, and he worked for years on The Apprentice. In fact, he explains it all. So here we go. Take it away, Neil.
Neil. So I work in live television. I've done that for the last 20 years. I work in TV production in the talent departments, taking care of all the performers. It's kind of like herding cats, if cats had publicists and massive egos. I did 6 seasons of the Celebrity Apprentice finale. Oh, yeah, you can see where this is going. My job was taking care of the Trump family, too. Yeah, Don Jr., Omarosa, Melania. It was like a freaking Mensa meeting every day. I worked on a bunch of those beauty pageants he had in the 90s,
uh-oh,
too. That was a good idea. Miss Teen Universe? Yeah, that's like giving Jeffrey Dahmer a cooking show.
Ooh. This guy's funny.
You got that one. Took a minute, but yeah. He would line up the girls on the side of the stage and he would inspect them, literally. He'd stick his little freaking doll fingers in their mouth and look at their teeth. So, not even kidding. This is true. He'd line them up like they're pieces of meat. He'd be like, you, you, and you, if you want to win, I'm in the penthouse suite. Come and see me.
Oh, my God.
Yep. If Trump had a cooking show, they'd call it the douchebag diet. McDonald's, chocolate ice cream, and girls that look like Ivanka are all he ever eats.
As far as I know, he hasn't been sued yet.
That's my favorite joke. I'm going to tell you one more thing. I don't usually tell. I'll tell you two more things. Since you're being so nice to me. He's a speed freak.
He's a speed freak.
He crushes up his Adderall and sniffs it because he can't read, so he gets really nervous when he has to read cue cards. I'm not kidding. This is true. I had a 24-page NDA, non-disclosure agreement. I didn't know then he was becoming president. Now it's, no way, dumbass. I'm telling you everything I know. So he gets nervous and he crushes up these pills. That's why he's sniffing when you see him in debates and when you see him reading. That's why he's tweeting. You know, it's like he's out of his mind. It makes sense if you think about it. Methamphetamine was invented by the Nazis to keep the fighter pilots up all night on bombing runs, right? So it makes sense that Trump would use it to hate tweet and his self-centered rage at 4 a.m. on the toilet. Right. I'm going to leave you with this. My favorite thing so far in the Trump era is when James Comey had to go to the White House and tell him about this dossier and the existence of a videotape of Trump taking a couple of showers with some Russian working girls. And it was Trump, right? So, of course, they had to be golden. Yeah. All right, take a second. Trump says to Comey, do I look like the kind of guy that needs to pay for prostitutes?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you look exactly like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
You actually look more like that kind of guy than anyone who's ever lived. They're actually changing the nickname for guys like that from Johns to Dons. You guys have been great. Thank you.
All right, so that's, his name is Noel Casler. Talk about getting it wrong. It wasn't Neil, it's Noel. Noel, C-A-S-L-E-R. That clip is readily available on YouTube. And he made some really tough allegations there. And as far as I know, no cease and desist, no lawsuit filed. One can only guess that Neil Casler is telling the truth. So there you go. If you wonder about Trump's sniffing, it's his Adderall habit. Anyway, so I just had to get that out. As I said, I did watch the speech. It was a massive waste of time. And basically, Trump just put one over on all the networks. all the networks. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, but in 2014, Barack Obama said he was going to deliver a speech on immigration, not only on immigration, it was to really to roll out DACA, as far as if my memory serves. And the network said, oh, that would be too partisan. You know what? I should pull the transcript. I'm remiss. Trump immigration. I know they have it at the Washington Post. I looked at it earlier this morning, but I didn't. Speech transcript. Because it was just chock full of lies. Or chock full of lies. now I can't find the Washington Post page. All right. Well, it's bringing up the New York Times. Let's see. And they have a full, it's fully annotated and all the lies. But you know what? We don't even have to do this because joining us today, later on in the hour, is Daniel Dale. Now, if you're not on Twitter as much as I am, or you don't live in Toronto, you might not know who Daniel Dale is. But he's a prolific tweeter in his job covering, well, being the bureau chief, I believe is his exact title. I want to get that right. Washington bureau chief of the Toronto Star. And basically he said he made it his goal to call out all of Trump's lies. And he's got one piece that's like a running article that I guess will constantly be updated. And the title, it's in the Toronto Star Project. It's I guess it's like their magazine or something. And it's projects.thestar.com, Donald Trump fact check. And the headline is Donald Trump has said 4,122 false things as U.S. president, with the 4,122 underlined and in red, showing that that number changes. So Daniel Dale has been keeping track of Donald Trump's lies since he took office. This site is really just mind blowing. So I'm looking forward to talking with with Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star. But before we get to him, you know, there's a lot of news, and the best way for me to get the news out to you is to do it live. Yeah, to do what's news, and we will do it live.
I read the news today.
We'll it's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, last night, all of the major TV networks were played as Donald Trump delivered a primetime Oval Office speech, the first of his presidency, that contained nothing, zero, nada, zilch, to warrant an Oval Office speech. And yes, it was chock full of lies. Trump repeated his demand for $5.7 billion in border wall money to end the government shutdown. He falsely claimed that there's a national security crisis at the southern border. Critics panned the speech for its lies and misrepresentations. Even Fox.
He made a number of claims there, speaking specifically about murder rates among those who are undocumented immigrants. The government statistics show that there is less violent crime by the undocumented immigrant population than by the general population. He called it a crisis of the heart and soul. He talked about drug crossings over the border, but government statistics show much of the heroin actually comes not over the unguarded border, but through ports of call. He talked about undocumented crossings over the past months. In fact, the number of undocumented crossings over the southern border has been steadily down over the last 10 years, and the government reports that there is more outward traffic than inward traffic. As for the trade deal he mentioned with Mexico, which he said would pay for the wall, that trade deal is not yet complete. And the president said that law enforcement professionals have requested the $5.7 billion. It's he who requested it, and it's he who said he would own the shutdown.
Yes, it absolutely is. The Democrats were ready with a response. Of course, Chuck and Nancy did it together.
There is no challenge so great that our nation cannot rise to meet it. We can reopen the government and continue to work through disagreements over policy. We can secure our border without an ineffective, expensive wall.
Yeah.
And we can welcome legal immigrants and refugees without compromising safety and security.
You think?
The symbol of America should be the Statue of Liberty, not a 30-foot wall.
That was a good line. Good line from Chuck, even if it was hard to watch him because he looked like a character from South Park. I know the interwebs are making comparisons to the American Gothic picture or the Concerned Parents. Look at Chuck Schumer, especially while Nancy Pelosi is talking. He's got one eye sort of shut more than the other one, and he looks like a drawing from South Park. Just saying. You got to go look. Anyway, here's Nancy.
The fact is, the women and children at the border are not a security threat. They are a humanitarian challenge, a challenge that President Trump's own cruel and counterproductive policies have only deepened. And the fact is, President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis, and must reopen the government.
Yes, all that's true. Bernie Sanders delivered his own response online in which he pointed out some real crises affecting the U.S.
And maybe here's the biggest crisis of all. The scientific community has made it very clear in telling us that climate change is real and is causing devastating harm to our country and the entire planet. And they have told us in no uncertain terms that if we do not transform our energy system away from fossil fuel, our nation and our planet, and the planet we will be leaving our kids and grandchildren, may well become unhealthy and even uninhabitable in the not-so-distant future.
Yep.
Mr. President, we don't need to create artificial crises. We have enough real crises. Let us end this shutdown and bring the American people together around an agenda that will improve life for all of our people.
You go, Bernie. Now, this wasn't planned as an official response to Trump's speech, but Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez appeared on Rachel Maddow's show, and she did weigh in.
No one should feel unsafe in the United States of America. And that includes our amazing and beautiful and productive immigrant community. And moreover, the one thing that the president has not talked about is the fact that he has systematically engaged in the violation of international human rights borders on human rights on our border. He has separated children from their families. He talked about what happened the day after Christmas. On the day of Christmas, a child died in ICE custody. The president should not be asking for more money to an agency that has systematically violated human rights. The president should be really defending why we are funding such an agency at all. Because right now, what we are seeing is death. Right now, what we are seeing is the violation of human rights. These children and these families are being held in what are called hieleras, which are basically freezing boxes that no person should be maintained in for any amount of time, let alone the amount of time that they are being kept on. And moreover, even if you are anti-immigrant in this country, the majority of immigrant overstays, the majority of the reason that people are undocumented is visa overstay.
Yep.
It's not because people are crossing a border illegally. It is because of visa overstay, which, mind you, he's talking about legal immigration. He's trying to restrict every form of legal immigration there is in the United States. Mm. He's fighting against family reunification. He's fighting against the diversity visa lottery. He's fighting against almost every way that people can actually legally enter this country, forcing them to become undocumented. And then he's trying to attack their undocumented status. This is systematic, it is wrong, and it is anti-American. And again, those women and children trying to come here with nothing but the shirts on their back to create an opportunity and to provide for this nation are acting more in an American tradition than this president is right now.
Okay, cut her some slack. She's new. Are you fucking kidding me? Listen to that woman, AOC. She knows what the hell she's talking about. She couldn't be more articulate than that. I've got more. You want to hear more? Let's hear another one.
I cannot tell you the amount of dysfunction that this president is advancing. We now have over 100 new members of this freshman class. I cannot even get laptops to my caseworkers on the ground in the Bronx and Queens so they can process the needs of our constituents. We can't get mortgage we cannot get their casework started because we can't even get laptops in the hands of our district offices because the president has decided to hold the paychecks of everyday Americans hostage so that he can fulfill a campaign I don't even want to call it a promise, a campaign fantasy that the vast majority of Americans disapprove of. And not only that, but in the actual address, there was falsehood after falsehood. And we have to make sure that we get our facts straight. Everyday immigrants commit crimes at a far lower rate than native-born Americans. And not only that, but the women and children on that border that are trying to seek refuge and seek opportunity in the United States of America with nothing but the shirt on their backs are acting more American than any person who seeks to keep them out ever will be.
Oh, my God. She's just brilliant. I could listen to her talk all day. I may have to find the entire interview. Although, you know, what's amazing is that was from an interview on the Rachel Maddow show. And all we heard for over 3 minutes was AOC. Rachel Maddow couldn't get a word in edgewise. And that was a beautiful thing because Alexandria, or Sandy, as she was known in college or in her childhood, in which, you know, the Republicans are trying to use that as a smear, knows her shit. And she can, you know, tangle with the best of them. All right. Meanwhile, tomorrow, Trump is supposed to visit the border tomorrow, a trip he's already admitted is nothing more than a photo op. So why the fuck is he going? This morning, the morning after the big speech that accomplished nothing and said nothing, this morning, Trump said he still may declare a national emergency to circumvent Congress and build a border wall if spending talks fail, raising the stake for negotiations set to resume later today. In fact, here's what he said.
I have the absolute right to do national emergency if I want. My threshold will be if I can't make a deal with people that are unreasonable.
Seriously? His threshold would be if he can't make a deal with people who are unreasonable. He's supposed to be the greatest negotiator, according to him, and he doesn't understand how to fucking negotiate. Negotiating means you give and take, you compromise. He's saying, I want my wall or nothing. I want my wall or the government's going to shut down till I hold my breath and my face turns blue and I die. Well, die quickly already, please. Hi. Trump, by the way, also chose today to pick a second fight, tweeting this morning, quote, billions of dollars are sent to the state of California for forest fires that, with proper forest management, spelled forest wrong. I know it doesn't have two R's, actually. I don't. That's why I spelled it like that. Forest management would never happen unless they get their act together, which is unlikely. I have ordered FEMA to send no more money. It is a disgraceful situation in lives and money. That was sent from the guy who is occupying the Oval Office. He's the resident, not the president. He's a fucking moron who's saying after the worst fire season in history in California with dozens of lives lost, billions of dollars in property, he's like, they don't have proper forest management. I'm not going to send them any more money. I'm an asshole. What am I? I'm an asshole.
Asshole.
About the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 It's a brand new story about the brand new world's biggest asshole.
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 His name is
Donald Trump.
And he's the new world's biggest asshole. Oh, yeah.
By the way, there was more breaking news this morning. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, you know, the guy who is allegedly still overseeing the Mueller investigation, he's announced he'll exit the Justice Department once the new attorney general is confirmed. NBC News has more.
Rod Rosenstein had long planned to serve about 2 years as the Justice Department's number two official, according to an administration official familiar with his thinking. We've been told that he's not being forced out by the White House, that this is his own intention. That's despite the fact that he's been a frequent target of criticism from President Trump's Twitter attacks on the Justice Department. But these officials say he plans to remain on the job until after the new attorney general is confirmed. After pushing out Jeff Sessions in November, President Trump nominated William Barr to be Attorney General, and Barr will be at the Capitol today, beginning a round of courtesy calls with senators ahead of his confirmation hearing. But Rosenstein actually considered resigning last fall, but decided to stay on the job.
And I can't find it right now, but I did see a tweet this morning that said Trump's not going to like this, but Bill Barr and Robert Mueller are old buds. You know how Trump is always claiming that Comey and Mueller are best buds? That's not true. They're friendly acquaintances, but Bill Barr and Mueller, they're really close. Just saying. What the fuck, Associated Press? The AP put out a fact-check tweet last night that reads, quote, "Democrats put the blame for the shutdown on Trump, but it takes two to tango. Trump's demand for $5.7 billion for his border wall is one reason for the budget impasse. The Democrats' refusal to approve the money is another." Hey, AP, fuck you. Unbelievable. Judd Legum tweeted in response straight out of the fake news files, AP fact check. Robert puts the blame on Paul for punching him in the face, but it takes two to tango. Paul throwing a punch is one reason for the incident. Robert having a face is another. And David Hogg responded to that fact check tweet by writing this: "Mugger, give me $2 million. Jogger, I don't have $2 million. Mugger shoots jogger. AP fact check, it takes two to tango." Welcome to Opposite World. One other thing. Oh, there's other stuff. There's Manafort is in trouble today. Here's Nicole Wallace explaining that.
Paul Manafort, who awaits sentencing, allegedly lied to special counsel Robert Mueller's investigators about sharing polling data related to the 2016 presidential campaign with a Russian operative. If this is the case, and Donald Trump's campaign chairman was sharing polling data, which can contain state-by-state or demographic information about how a candidate is polling at a moment in a campaign, then Robert Mueller just might have an important piece of information about the intersection of the Trump political machine and Russian efforts to aid Donald Trump's campaign.
Uh-oh.
The significance of these developments on a day that Donald Trump is being aided by every television network that has agreed to air his immigration speech is that the more information we learn about what the Justice Department knows, the more we see ties between Trump's campaign and Russians.
Uh-oh. Can you say collusion? One more thing. Manafort's lawyers really screwed up because they supposedly released something that was redacted, except when you copied and pasted the redacted stuff, the black bars covering the redacted text disappear so you can read everything that was allegedly redacted. Oh, yeah. And Natalia Veselnitskaya was arrested. She was.
This breaking news just into CNN. A Russian lawyer who helped organize a meeting at Trump Tower in 2016 between members of the Trump campaign and family and Russians promising dirt on Hillary Clinton has now been charged with obstruction of justice in a separate case. CNN crime and justice reporter Shimon Prokupes joins us now with the details. Shimon, what do you know?
Yeah, that's right, Jim. So she's charged with obstruction of justice in connection to a case out of the Southern District of New York. It has to do with a civil money laundering and forfeiture investigation. What's important about this case and this investigation is that it details her deep ties, her close connections to Russians, to senior level members of the Kremlin, certainly. And that's what is so significant here. Really, certainly this charge, this indictment of her clearly shows that she has connections to the Russian government. At least that's what the FBI and certainly the Department of Justice believes. Now, it's important to note this is not in any way related to the Trump Tower meeting that she helped organize, that Donald Trump Jr. was president and Paul Manafort and other people associated with the Trump campaign. Obviously, that investigation is still ongoing with the special counsel and Robert Mueller and his team. But this certainly is significant in the sense that it really, for the first time, we have members of the Department of Justice, the FBI here, showing her deep connections to the Russian government. And obviously, that part of the investigation, her connections to the Russian government and what actually the meeting at the Trump Tower was about, that is still under investigation by the Mueller team.
Okay, so lots of stuff going on. Of course, has Trump off his rocker as usual, but the more stuff, you know, if anyone thinks that this speech last night wasn't a diversion from the Mueller news, I don't know, you might be right. Who knows what goes inside that Adderall-addled brain if there is such a thing, of Trump's. Certainly not me. All right. Let's take a quick time out. We'll come back on the other side and attempt to make contact with Daniel Dale, who's in Washington, D.C. He's the Washington bureau chief of the Toronto Star. And I can't imagine anyone wanting a job where it's where what you do day in and day out is cover Donald Trump. I guess in one sense it's exciting, in another sense it's just infuriating. Anyway, Daniel Dale from the Toronto Star joins us next. Don't go away. I'm Nicole Sandler, NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Can't afford a monthly donation? Is that what's getting you down, Bunky? But maybe you shop on Amazon.com occasionally?
Well then, just use the NicoleSandler.com Amazon portal, and we'll get a small commission on all your purchases.
But I just bought...
Don't worry, we can't see what you bought.
Just bookmark Amazon through the NicoleSandler.com portal, and use it. Every purchase helps Nicole stay on the air.
What's the worst political idea you've not heard about? I'll tell you, today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Ideally, elections are about ideas. But these days, policy discussions are being shoved aside by raw partisanship and vitriol. Not only are good ideas ignored, but very bad ideas can become public policy without the public knowing it. For example, the Trump team wants to snuff out your constitutional right to free speech and assembly by putting an exorbitant fee on public protests in our nation's capital city. In other words, you'd still be, quote, free to rally for or against any policy or issue, but not for free, apparently meant to deter any more of the mass demonstrations against their policies on women, immigrant children, climate change, etc. They want each protesting group to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to the government for policing and other necessary costs of guaranteeing the public's right to protest. Corporations and billionaires would have no problem paying, but regular grassroots groups would be priced off the public lawn. Such historic protests as Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1963 march and his I Have a Dream speech couldn't have happened under Trump's Pay Me plan. I'm guessing that a good 90% of Americans, Republican, Democrat, and otherwise, would shout no to this repression of a fundamental civic right. But I'd also bet that not a single congressional candidate has even mentioned it to voters in this year's elections. Yet, in perverse Orwellian newspeak, the Trumpsters pushing the plan say it's, quote, designed to provide greater clarity about how and where demonstrations can occur in a manner that protects historically important land. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, I was born at night, but it wasn't last night. This proposal is designed to protect nothing but the bad policies of the power elites from objections by riffraff like you and me. To help stop their authoritarian power play, go to ACLU.org.
If you'd like more of Jim Hightower's real populism, check out the Hightower Lowdown. Jim's monthly newsletter gives you the real lowdown on which corporations, by name, are doing what to the middle class, our environment, and our democracy. Each month, the Hightower Lowdown brings you facts you didn't know, along with actions you can take to fight back. It also comes with a sense of humor. Hightower believes we can fight the gods and still have fun. Plus, get this, it's cheap. Only $15 brings you 12 issues a year. For real populism, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
All right, we are back. And I'm thrilled to welcome our guest to the show today. His name is Daniel Dale. He's the Washington Bureau Chief of the Toronto Star. Daniel, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Now, before covering Trump in the U.S., you spent 4 years as a Toronto City Hall reporter and bureau chief, mostly covering Mayor Rob Ford, huh? I got to ask, before we get to anything else, who's crazier, Ford or Trump?
Well, as a reporter, I shouldn't weigh in on their level of craziness. Mm. I will say that the Trump story, I think, is crazier even than the case of the crack-smoking mayor. Covering Ford, it was wild and exhausting and at sort of a fever pitch for a number of months. But that pitch is reached by Trump all the time. You know, it's been like that the entire presidency, the way that reporters are constantly scrambling, the way that we're struggling to prioritize the various controversies and scandals because there's so many of them. I just think the Trump story is way wilder on the whole than the Ford story.
I mean, for me, it's hard to qualify, but I do remember those days when, you know, the pictures were coming out of Trump snorting coke and doing crazy things. And I thought, you know, this is a fun obsession in the U.S. of the mayor in Toronto, thinking we could never have somebody that crazy here. And now the tables are turned. I have to wonder, obviously you work for the Toronto Star, what the Canadians think about this insanity going on down here. Is this something that that people enjoy reading? They must, because you're obviously doing well. Is this a topic of general discussion, regular discussion up there?
Oh yeah. People, I think Canadians are watching the Trump story as if they are Americans. Mm. They don't read it as if they're foreigners. You know, very occasionally I'll have to explain something about the way Congress works or, you know, what the heck is a government shutdown because we don't have those in Canada. But they know all the characters. They know the Trump aides. I was visiting Toronto, I guess last year now. And I was in a coffee shop in my neighborhood, and Sarah Sanders' briefing was just playing on the TV on, like, the local 24-hour cable news channel. And so, yeah, Canadians are captivated by this just like Americans are.
It is the weirdest, most surreal political story, I think, certainly in my lifetime. Just the fact that this guy, this would-be reality TV star, who we learned through a great piece, I think it was in the New York Times last week, that he, you know, we knew it already, that he really was struggling before he was tapped by Mark Burnett and NBC to host this TV show, and they repackaged him as like the successful businessman that he really wasn't. But maybe that sort of opened the door for his lies. I mean, did you know, Daniel Dale, when you started covering Trump, that it was going to be a sort of a marathon coverage of the lies that the man tells?
No, I really didn't. I mean, I was there the day that he launched his campaign, that famous speech where he came down the golden escalator in Trump Tower.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was a joke. Like I was making fun of it on Twitter, you know, mm-hmm. making snarky comments, thinking, you know, well, that's the end of that candidacy. And I was wrong. You know, there was a lot in there. If you go back and read it, all the things that resonated with the Republican base were in that speech, you know, the incendiary immigration stuff, the trade stuff, you know, all of it was there. But I didn't know exactly what he was like. You know, I'm a Canadian. Of course I knew who Donald Trump was, but I didn't know his reputation for extreme dishonesty. Even though it had been documented for years by his biographers and others, I didn't really understand it until maybe midway through the campaign when they're just like, this guy doesn't stop. You know, it's lie after lie. I have never seen anything like this. I started talking to presidential historians, and they said, no, there has never been a major, you know, certainly a nominee's campaign that involves so many lies. And of course, it's just continued into his presidency.
Yeah. And to the point where you have this, I was going through some of your stuff at thestar.com and came upon a project at projects.thestar.com on Donald Trump's, I guess, full catalog of lies since he took office. And you now have it up to 4,122 things. Obviously, that number changes as the days go on, keeping track of every false claim that Trump has made since being inaugurated. That's got to be exhausting.
It is exhausting. And I say that not to complain. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's worthwhile. I'm happy I do it. I'm going to keep going. And of course, journalists do so many harder things. You know, they're journalists in war zones and covering forest fires, et cetera. But that said, yeah, it's just literally tiring. I mean, there's so many, there's only so many hours in the day. And I'm not a full-time fact checker. My job is to be the Washington correspondent, you know, mm-hmm. telling people what's going on here in D.C. And so basically I do a lot of it on weekends, also nights. And so my Sunday nights are usually just terrible. And often it takes up just much of Sunday when I just want to be outside or taking a nap
uh-huh.
or
sure.
eating ice cream or something. You're just dealing with you know, Trump lies. So yeah, it's tiring. It's not fun, but I think it's worth doing.
I bet. Well, it is, and it gives us more, I guess, ammunition to fight back against him with, because it's just something that I noticed had been happening for a while in Republican circles. If they don't like something, they just say, I don't believe you. You know, they take truth, they take facts, they take findings from studies and just, you know, poo-poo the results. This is taking it the other way. This is openly just making shit up and claiming it's true. I call it opposite world. But it's the gaslighting of America. It's really dangerous because we have an administration who's making up their own facts and having everybody around them repeat them so that, you know, those of us who were, you know, the sane ones are saying, wait a minute, the sky is blue. They keep telling me the sky is green. And now these other people are starting to agree the sky is green. They're making me feel crazy for insisting on the fact that the sky is blue. But this seems to be where we are today.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. It's a challenge to deal with. And another thing I get often is, you know, Trump will lie or make a false claim or whatever. And then you'll correct it. And then people will say, will accuse you of not caring about some underlying truth that Trump didn't say. So Trump will say, like, you know, homicides in Chicago hit a new record, you know, last year. And you'll be like, actually, it's been declining for 2 years.
Right.
And then people will be like, well, do you not care that there's still, you know, 600 homicides in Chicago? You think that's okay? And it's like, no, my job as a reporter is to point out when powerful people are not being honest. And I'm saying that it's not honest that, you know, there was a record last year. And so there's various ways that they try to get you. And I think it is a constant challenge to sort of keep your bearings and you know, remind yourself, I'm not crazy.
Right.
I'm not being unfair by pointing out the truth. This is just what we do as journalists and as citizens. But it's, you know, there's kind of a siege feeling. You kind of feel like you're under attack a lot of the time.
Right. I agree. Now, Daniel Dale, I actually had you booked to join us today before last night's speech was even scheduled, but it worked out fine. I saw you last night on CNN after the speech. We were flipping around channels to see how everyone was covering it. Tried to go to Fox, but I just can't take Sean Hannity. I just can't do it. So knowing that this speech was going to be based on falsehoods before it even started, what did you think of it?
Well, there were a number of false claims, as everyone who knows Trump expected. But I just thought it was kind of boring.
Yeah.
It was just the same stuff that Trump always says. Literally, like the same, a lot of them were the same false claims. It was the same rhetoric about, you know, graphic descriptions of murders committed by unauthorized immigrants, unfounded or unproven suggestions that the wall would prevent, you know, all of these crimes and all of these drug deaths, which we know it wouldn't. And so for me, it was just like, well, what's the news? You know, what is my lead, as we say as reporters? What's the headline here? And to me, it was really hard to find one because we've heard this all before.
Yeah, but what I took from the piece that you wrote this morning about the speech was, again, pointing out his lies. You wrote, among other things, Trump falsely claimed Democrats had asked him to build a steel barrier rather than a concrete wall, an alternative he came up with himself. Falsely claimed a wall would be indirectly funded through his revised NAFTA deal, which has not been approved by Congress and could not fund a wall. Falsely said Democrats would not pony up for, quote, border security. They have offered to pay for various security measures, just not a wall. And misleadingly suggested a wall would be a significant obstacle to smuggled heroin, most of which comes through legal ports of entry. And you could go from there. I mean, that was just like the scratching the surface. I mean, my favorite was when he said the wall would pay for the wall.
Right, right. It'll pay for itself. And the thing is, like, he can, it's one of the ways that he can sort of get fact checkers and get people yelling at fact checkers by making these claims that, you know, that are sort of abstract arguments where you can say, well, you know, he didn't mean that literally. So I understand the point. You know, if you're going to make an argument, okay, the wall is going to save us money. We don't know if it will. But if it does save us money, you know, then, you know, say, you know, the government will have fewer expenditures, so we will have more funds to pay for a wall. Like, okay, maybe that is quasi-reasonable. But the literal point is that, you know, this shutdown is about finding a specific pile of money to pay for the wall, like not an abstract pile. We need a specific funding stream. And so he is suggesting to people that, you know, the wall itself will create a specific funding stream to pay for itself, or the trade deal will create a specific funding stream to pay for the wall. And that's just not how it works.
Yeah, no, I know that. By the way, Daniel Dale is with us. You should follow him on Twitter at ddale8. In fact, we had some people yesterday during the show asking, I'm not going to watch this. Who should I follow on Twitter so I know what's going on without having to see his mug? And of course, we responded with at ddale8. But there's stuff going on this morning, I guess, here from the chat room. The Hill reported that Pelosi and Schumer response topped Trump's actual speech in the ratings, but that this morning they got together. Schumer said the president asked if we would fund his wall. When Dem leaders said no, the president just got up and walked out. And someone else said he, you know, pounded his fist on the table. I thought he was supposed to be such a great negotiator. It seems that his only negotiating tactic is saying my way or the highway.
Yeah, well, I think the brand that he has established as a great negotiator was always questionable at best. We know there was a whole lot of myth-making around Donald Trump that was not always borne out by facts, to be generous. But certainly as president, I mean, whatever you think of his business career, you know, he made a lot of money and he lost a lot of money, but, you know, made some of it back. As president, he's just not shown that he is a great deal maker. You know, he did get, you know, a giant tax cut passed with Republicans, which I don't think is a great negotiating accomplishment. But he failed to negotiate on health care. You know, the DACA wall negotiation, you know, he could have had wall funding, but he decided to abandon that negotiation,
right.
I guess thinking he could get some better deal later, which he hasn't. And then certainly during the shutdown fight, you know, his instincts have not seemed to be great. All of the polling data suggests the shutdown is not going well for him. We know he doesn't have a good way out, and he doesn't seem to have any new tricks up his sleeve. You know, he has fear-mongering rhetoric. He has, you know, pounding his fist on the table, but that's not working, and it's not clear to me if he has any ideas even for extricating himself from this jam that he created himself.
Yeah, none at all. In fact, he just tweeted. I have to put on my Trump voice. Just left a meeting with Chuck and Nancy. A total waste of time. I asked what is going to happen in 30 days if I quickly open things up. Are you going to approve border security, which includes a wall or steel barrier? Nancy said no. I said bye bye. Nothing else works. Again, this is what we're stuck with. That's presidential for him, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, this is him. You know, he's even when he's losing, when he's on the defensive, you know, he tries to portray himself as the dominant figure in the negotiation. You know, I'm setting the terms. I'm telling them bye-bye. I'm kicking them out of the room. But that, in reality, that's not, you know, whatever happened in that particular meeting, I don't know. You know, in the overall picture, he is not in control of the situation.
No, not at all. And now we're hearing that there are some perhaps breaks in the Republican wall, for lack of a better term, that Lisa Murkowski came out yesterday and said they need to open up the government. I guess Susan Collins, although she's so wishy-washy, we don't know. Gardner from Colorado, a few of them are starting to say enough of the shutdown thing already. There's legislation that's being introduced to open the government back up piecemeal. So Daniel Dale, if I ask you to put on your prognosticator hat, I know you're a reporter, so that's not really what you do. Do you think how do you think this is going to end?
Well, it is hard to prognosticate because Trump is Trump, and you know, he defies you know, rational prediction on occasion. I think it is possible that enough Republicans will say, look, this has gone on long enough, we're just gonna, you know, we're gonna open up the government, we'll override Trump's veto if necessary. But they don't want to do that. You know, as we've seen for a long time now. They just don't want to go against this president, even with his approval ratings, you know, around 40%, which is bad. But it's also possible that Trump will throw a tantrum and call a national emergency that he's been threatening and just open up a whole other can of worms, you know, prompt legal challenges, accusations of abuse of power, you know, just throw everything into chaos. Now, because he seems to have a greater appetite for chaos than a lot of other people in government do.
I guess. In fact, he said that this morning. It's a 9-second clip. Here's what he said.
I have the absolute right to do national emergency if I want.
What's your threshold for when you might make
a decision? My threshold will be if I can't make a deal with people that are unreasonable.
With people that are unreasonable. So if he can't make a deal with himself. So basically he's saying, if they don't give in to my demands, then I'll take the next unbelievable step, which is calling a national emergency. Wouldn't that, though, then precipitate lawsuits? I mean, I would think that that there would be a lot of challenges to him attempting to do something like that.
There would be. Absolutely, there would be challenges. It would likely be tied up in court. One Republican strategist, also a lobbyist named Liam Donovan, said to me yesterday, maybe Trump wouldn't mind that because at least he could claim that he was fighting rather than having capitulated. And then he could just blame, as usual, you know, blame the courts for stymieing him. So rather than saying, sorry, base, you know, I'm giving up on trying to get this wall right now, saying like, look, I did everything in my power and, you know, and these evil judges and Democrats are fighting me every step of the way. And so, you know, I think that's a plausible argument for why he might end up doing it.
Wow. Wow. I mean, just when you think things couldn't possibly get worse, he opens his mouth again and we see the possibilities. Daniel Dale, do you go to the White House press briefings when they have press briefings, if they do anymore?
No, I've never been. I don't have a permanent, what they call a White House hard pass that lets you in every day. Mm. I theoretically should be able to get day passes or week passes, but they just have not responded the several times that I've applied. And so I've basically given up. I mean, it's not, I'd like to go just to be able to say yes when people like you ask me. Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been, you know, I've been a couple of times, but it's in practice, it's not a very good use of time, in my view.
No, it really isn't. Those things have become a farce. Sarah Sanders, I know there were some reports last week that she was trying to get another job. I don't know how truthful they are, but and that she's having a hard time. It seems like everybody is, because if you lie for the president, how can anybody trust you to be their spokesperson?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'm kind of skeptical, honestly, that people in the administration will struggle, you know, for good, lucrative careers.
Yeah.
People in the George W. Bush administration, you know, I think back then there were a lot of people saying, oh, these people, you know, they'll never work in this town again. They're disgraced. But just the conservative, you know, ecosystem in Washington and elsewhere is so big, you know, law firms and lobby firms and, you know, think tanks and consulting firms. I think that someone like Sarah Sanders will land on her feet, regardless of her conduct in the White House.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, she hasn't announced her exit plans yet, although this morning we're hearing about Rod Rosenstein leaving with the interesting sort of adjunct news that that Robert Mueller and Bill Burr, nominated attorney general, are actually really close friends, unlike the rumor that Trump has been pushing that Jim Comey and Robert Mueller were best friends. That's not true, but Mueller and Burr really are close. Do you think Trump will withdraw his nomination?
I don't know. I actually did not know about that.
Just read
that,
it.
That relationship involving Mueller. Yes, I'm really not sure. I doubt that Trump would withdraw it over that, but we'll see, I guess.
Yeah, you never know. One last thing. This morning, as if all the stuff going on isn't enough, Donald Trump decided to open yet another front in his war on common sense. He tweeted that he's going to stop sending money to California unless they get their act together with proper forest, misspelled, with proper forest management. He gave forest two R's. That's besides the point. The fact that California just came through their worst fire season in history with the prognosis really bad. And he's like, they don't do proper forest management. I'm not going to give them any more money. Is he just going after California because he thinks they're all Democrats there?
I think that's possible. I mean, it's, we kind of gloss over it today in the media because so much is going on and because Trump is Trump, but I think it's a pretty extraordinary statement. And he wasn't even saying, you know, I'm going to deny forest management money to California because they're doing forest management wrong. He was saying that he's going to tell FEMA to not give money to California because he's unhappy with their forest management practices. FEMA, of course, you know, is the agency that helps disaster victims. You know, so the people who are hurt by the wildfires, et cetera, Trump saying, I'm not going to help them. He's saying, I'm not going to help Americans, you know, whose homes have been burned down, who have lost loved ones in their property. It's just wild. And I think it's also important to point out that the federal government manages more forest land in California than the state of California does. So, you know, most of the management is being done by Trump's own government. So I think, you know, this experts say he's misinformed here. And aside from the non-factualness of it, I think just an extraordinary statement from a president.
Absolutely. But then again, this is a president who makes many extraordinary statements not extraordinary as if, you know, that you would hope to get from a president and that you can go, yeah, that's the way to go. But extraordinary in that I can't believe this guy is saying this stuff. How could he be such an imbecile? So that's my daily thought process. Daniel Dale, do you get like assignments to go out and say, try to do a story on this angle? Or do you just wait and see what kind of gifts the president leaves at your door? And I, of course, I picture a cat bringing in a dead rodent and leaving it on the doorstep when I say that.
It's a mix. So sometimes I'll think of an idea, or get an assignment and try to, you know, on Monday I'll be like, I should do this in-depth story on such and such for the Saturday Sunday paper. But often it's reactive and there's so much to react to that it can be hard to plan because your best laid plans always get ruined by some breaking piece of Trump news. And so I think very few reporters in Washington are lazy, but if you want to be a lazy reporter and just sit back and wait for news rather than breaking news, you know, it's like a fire hose. There's so much. So you could do that if you wanted to.
Yeah, without a doubt. Anything on tap for today or know what you're working on now, or is it just more fallout from the speech? Where do you go after we hang up?
I don't know exactly. I'm trying to think of some good story ideas right now. I mean, everything's kind of in limbo in Washington because of the shutdown. Mm-hmm. And there's not that much to say about it right now that I didn't say in the story in today's paper or on the speech. So, I'm very briefly stuck, but I know I'll be unstuck soon.
Oh, I'm sure, because he's on a roll. So have your pick at it. Daniel Dale, again, we find him at the Toronto Star. One last question. Does Justin Trudeau ever say anything publicly about Trump? I mean, we know what he's got to think of him. Do you have any inside info as to what his thoughts are in dealing with this moron?
I have just very vague inside info that Trudeau, you know, it's all unsurprising. You know, he finds it difficult to deal with Trump. You know, he sees the same Trump that everyone else does. And so it's a challenge sometimes to get him focused, to get him talking about what, you know, Trudeau wants him to talk about, to get him to stop ranting, you know, all that. Nothing surprising at all. In public, Trudeau is exceptionally diplomatic. Mm-hmm. He has chosen on a few strategic occasions to push back against Trump, particularly on trade and tariffs. But in most cases, you know, he'll say, it's not my role to weigh in on, you know, internal U.S. decisions. Mm. He will not, you know, criticize Trump policy moves or, personal things that Trump's being criticized for,
right?
Behaviors, conduct. And so, yeah, Trudeau, he understands that the economic relationship, the diplomatic relationship, is super important no matter who the president is. So regardless of their personal disagreements, he just doesn't want to anger this president.
Oh, he's just upholding the impression we have of the nice Canadians. being too nice to call him out. Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star. Again, find him on Twitter at ddale8. Daniel, thank you so much. As I said, I'm a big fan of yours. I follow your Twitter. We use a lot of it on the show, and I appreciate the work you do. And thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. All right, Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star. Again, if you're ever wanting somebody to live tweet a Trump event, Daniel Dale is unparalleled. I'll post links to his stories, including the one where he is keeping track of all of Trump's lies, every false claim Trump has said as president, and it keeps getting updated. And it goes in reverse order. So it's good toilet reading, actually. All right, with that, we're done for the day. Today is Wednesday, tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be back tomorrow, and he's been on a roll lately at Down with Tyranny, so there's lots to talk about. With that, I will bid you a fond farewell until we meet again tomorrow. As always, thank you for listening. You can always find the podcast posted at NicoleSandler.com, along with other stuff. And if you wanted to make a donation to our cause, there's a donate page there as well. Thanks again for listening. Don't listen to too much Trump. He'll rot your brain. And on that note, I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone.